This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, primarily on this program, well, almost exclusively really on this program, we talk about hockey. But it's always a day like this where I get those feelings of baseball optimism. Like, I'm old enough to remember when the Blue Jays started. And I'm old enough to have worked for Versa Foods when the Blue Jays first qualified for the playoffs. They had the food contract. I used to hustle up Jumbo Cokes and hot dogs at Exhibition Stadium. I only did it, this is back in 1985, so I could watch Blue Jays games. And then on a day like this, I get optimistic, Matt Marchese. Before we get into the remainder of this show and let everyone know who's aboard and what we'll be talking about today, namely the 14 games around the go in the NHL this evening, should I be optimistic about the Blue Jays this season? I look around and I say there is a freight train. Like, there's a freight train with the Baltimore Orioles. That team is an absolute juggernaut and will be for quite some time. And then after that, I always wonder about the Yankees because Yankees. But how should I feel about the Blue Jays this year with a relatively inactive offseason, to be generous?
So the way I look at this team is the offense can't be any worse than it was last year because it was putrid. Actually, scratch that. It wasn't
putrid.
That's
what we're hanging our hats on?
No.
That's what we're hanging our hats on?
No.
It can't be as bad as last year.
It can't. They did hit when nobody was on base, which was cool. But when people were on base, they really struggled, you know, when it really matters. I think the pitching staff is really good. I think it's talented. There's a lot more depth on this team than I believe that there was last season, especially off the bench. So that for me is room for optimism. The Yankees are old and they're already banged up, and they're only going to get older and more banged up as the season goes along. The Orioles are the class of the division. Yeah. That's fine. The Tampa Bay is still going to be in and around a wild card spot because they're Tampa Bay and they don't go away. And Boston stinks. Yeah. So I think there is room for optimism. I think they're a playoff team. I think they're right around, I think they're between 87 and 90 wins. I know that seems really optimistic, but I just look at it much like I did last year.
That's okay. It's March 28th. We can be optimistic. We can be jaded in about a week.
Yeah.
Or maybe two.
Or in 5 hours. Optimism.
Yes, perhaps. Exactly. We'll see what happens in the opening game here. Okay, so two hockey. So really quickly, here's what Maestro Marchese has put together for the show today. Jonathan Davis, our good friend, West Coast Hockey, from the NHL Network, host of Show Me the Money Hockey Betting Podcast. He will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. We should park some time to talk about, amongst other teams, the Los Angeles Kings. They are in action against the, check notes, Edmonton Oilers, a team that may face off in the opening round. We've seen these two teams play plenty. Does that mean we're sick of it? No, quite the opposite. Elliot Friedman returns. Elliot at the Maple Leafs, Washington Capitals skate this morning, so he's going to kick off hour two. Of note there, Austin Matthews game time decision. Matt Marchese, illness is cited. We'll see what happens there. No to Mitch Marner again. And also, Morgan Riley remains day-to-day there. Charlie Lindgren, first goaltender off the ice, no surprise. He'll get the start for the Washington Capitals, and Ryan Novosinski will stop by from NJ.com and the Star Ledger. We'll talk about the New Jersey Devils, and is it too little, too late? Are they essentially what I'm going to ask Ryan? It's a one-question interview, really, and it is, are we seeing the New Jersey Devils pull an Ottawa Senators?
Yeah.
Because how many times have you seen the Ottawa Senators do this? And they did this again last night against the Buffalo Sabres, the 5-goal blitz to kick off the game. And here we are towards the end of the season. The Ottawa Senators are picking up wins, and we're saying, all right, they've figured it out. Just wait till next year. I've been fooled before. I'm guessing you've been fooled before. I'm guessing anyone listening or watching right now has been fooled before as well. Does it feel like New Jersey is pulling an Ottawa here down the stretch?
It does. And I mean, it's such a weird thing because they're finally getting goaltending. So are they pulling an Ottawa, or did they just acquire the player at the wrong time? Right? Like that is part
Ottawa's
of the conversation.
Ottawa's
had the same goalies all year though. New Jersey hasn't. I mean, New Jersey's been like a turnstile. What have they started? Like five or six different goalies? But now they have, like, Jake Allen has been fantastic. I think he's got a .925 save percentage.
Yeah, he's been great
in his six games. So I think
he's been great.
I think that's the part of the conversation is, did they just get the goalie at the wrong time? And then that may in fact be what the story is with the New Jersey Devils.
That and injuries. We'll get into the New Jersey Devils coming up in an hour or two. Meanwhile, last night, Boston Bruins, Tampa Bay Lightning. I kind of feel bad for Boston in this one. A really hard-fought game the night before against the Florida Panthers, and then they jump out of the frying pan into the fire against a really good Tampa Bay Lightning team, who have been the second hottest team in March. Spot quiz, who's been number one? Duh, Nashville. 3-1 is the final score there, and man, did Tanner Jeannot catch Trent Frederick with a punch right. And it's rare that you see Trent Frederick just seatbelt after he gets hit. Like, that's a tough guy. But the minute he got popped, he just turned into hug and tug. That was it. I'm getting in close, and I'm just hoping the officials stop this one.
And Jeannot realized that, too, Tampa was good.
Jeannot realized it, yeah.
He knew he caught him, and he could have done some
really
damage.
Messed up Frederick.
Yeah.
Braden Point with goal number 42. Nikita Kucherov with goal number 42 in that one as well. Ottawa over Buffalo by a score of 6-2, where the Sabres were booed off the ice, Matt Marchese, booed off the ice.
Yeah, and then they pulled the goalie in the third period with like 17 minutes left or 18 minutes or whatever it was. I stopped watching after, you know, it was very early on that one. I was focusing a lot of my attention on the Tampa Bay-Boston game. But, I mean, with this Buffalo Sabres team, like, this is a team that was on the cusp of making the playoffs last year. And now we look at them and say, like, this is another lost season in Buffalo. It's another year without the playoffs after coming into the year where there was a lot of, you know, attention paid to the Buffalo Sabres and saying, like, this could be the team that takes the next step. There was a lot of expectations, probably too many expectations, for Devon Levi. And it ends up being that Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is the better goalie. And he got, you can look at the box score and say, oh, well, he had a bad night. Well, the team in front of him had a horrible first period because they were certainly a lot better and the game was out of reach by the time Devon Levi got in there. But I think that it's, you know, we really need to look at the Buffalo Sabres and the makeup of that team. You know, we talk about all the offensive stars that they have on that team. Their defense feels like it's built, you know, you have a lot of the same defensemen. I do wonder if it's time to look at maybe moving some of those young offensive players and getting a really good defenseman in there, like a stalwart defenseman that, you know, is this thing called responsible in his own zone. Because the other guys have a big problem with that.
Let me get to that in a second. About the game last night, I'm just going to be blunt, and it sounds harsh, but I couldn't help thinking one thing when I'm watching this first period last night.
What's that?
The Buffalo Sabres look like a team that just came off a long road trip and have given up.
The second part especially, yeah.
But they just look like, oh, we just got back from a long road trip and, ugh, what a long season and I give up. That's what it looked like, and the crowd reacted accordingly. You heard the serenade after the first period.
Sure did.
I would love to have been in that room for the first intermission. And they came out and there were some signs of life, but still. Like, it looked like the team that just came back from a, week and a half road trip and have given up. That's what it looked like. Harsh? Sure. But that's what it looked like to me. As for what's next for the Buffalo Sabres, and we got a lot to get to, so I don't want to park too much here on the Sabres. I think that as much as ever before, I think everything is on the table. I should say, not everything.
But a lot.
But, like, no one, like Rasmus Dahlin is not on the table. Devon Levi is not on the table. But I think that more so than ever in the recent past for the Buffalo Sabres, things are on the table that may not have been on the table even a year ago. That's what it feels like to me. Like, they're gonna trade. They're gonna change their veteran mix for sure. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens after that. We'll see what, you know, maybe big names go out the door. Maybe a combination of, you know, some of the prospects that they've picked up. Maybe they turn them into trade assets. I don't know. Maybe Buffalo looks at a team. Like, I keep wondering about the Calgary Flames with regards to what do they do and how do they continue this rebuild and how do they maybe find, you know, young studs that can lead them the next direction. And I keep coming back to, while you find a team that's right on the cusp and needs someone, that has some years under their belts. Now, those types of players tend to have contracts with them that are pretty weighty, but they also have young prospects that you're interested in. So that's a team that I really do wonder about. Like, if I'm the Buffalo Sabres, I'm wondering, okay, Calgary might be the team that we mix with here in the offseason. They're taking the step back, clearly. We're on our way up. We're close to it. I wonder if we can put something together here. We'll see. So Boston, Tampa, and Ottawa, Buffalo, those were the stories last night. A couple of things. Oh, by the way, Western Hockey League Bantam draft yesterday. Just a quick other final thought here on the Western League. Mm. Western League Bantam draft, the lottery was last night, and Everett's, by way of Kamloops, that would have been the Olin Zellwiger trade, pays off. So they have the number one pick. And there is a player that we have talked about before by the name of Landon DuPont, who I believe will both apply for and be granted exceptional status. It's kind of like, he's like the Connor Bedard of the Western League, but a defenseman. Oh, okay. How about that for lofty praise?
Yeah, no kidding.
He's Mickey DuPont's kid. The kid's like phenomenal. I would imagine he would be granted exceptional status and get in. And, well, congratulations, Everett. You just got yourself a beautiful defense.
So, hold on a second. The Bantam draft, so they are 15. So he's going to get drafted at 14?
Yeah. Exceptional status.
Wowza.
Honestly, he's grade 9 and he's ridiculous.
How big is he?
Go to YouTube. Well, hang on, I'll have a quick look.
I got it.
Landon. How big is Landon DuPont?
Looks like a big kid, but that's just a picture.
Go
5'11. 5'11. That's
5'11, 170 pounds.
Yeah, he's
a tooth.
He's okay.
You want to all feel old yeah, at the same time?
I saw it.
He's a 2009.
Yeah, about that. In 2009, I'm not even going to give my age because you're older, so I don't want to make you feel bad.
How dare you? okay, anyway, just wanted to throw that in there and start to get that Landon DuPont name on the radar here, certainly on this program. It's already been all over the Western Hockey League. 14 games in action tonight. Oh, by the way, Boston squandered an opportunity to clinch. I mean, they'll do it eventually.
Nobody wants to clinch.
16 can clinch tonight, Maddie. No one. Vancouver didn't the other night. The Rangers said, okay, we will, fine.
But they backdoored their way in.
It wasn't easy against the Philadelphia Flyers. I know. They and then the game. So the Boston Bruins had a chance yesterday. They're idle tonight, but they could clinch.
Yep.
The Florida Panthers can clinch tonight. Carolina, Dallas, Vancouver, and Colorado can all clinch tonight. And tonight is spicy.
Yes.
Tonight there's a lot. There's a lot of great games. So the Islanders and the Florida Panthers. As I mentioned, the Florida Panthers can clinch tonight. The Islanders are 6 points out. Good news for the Florida Panthers. Aaron Ekblad returns for the Cats, so good news there. The Philadelphia Flyers will face off against the Montreal Canadiens, who most recently snapped Colorado's winning streak at 9. Flyers hanging on to third in the Metropolitan Division against the hard-charging Washington Capitals, who are in action against the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. We'll get more on that game coming up later on in the program. The Detroit Red Wings facing off against Carolina Hurricanes. The Hurricanes 3 points out of first. Detroit 2 points behind Washington, but it's really three because Washington has the tiebreaker against Maddie just about everybody. I don't know why I throw this one in there. Maybe because I want it to mean something. Calgary and St. Louis. I mean, the Blues are out, 6 points out, 10 games left. 2-1 against the loss against the Vegas Golden Knights the other day. That's a tough one. Winnipeg Jets have lost 4 games in a row. Okay, most recently 4-3 to the Edmonton Oilers on Tuesday. Vegas, of course, coming off that OT loss where they squandered a checks notes 4-0 lead. 5-4 is the final against Nashville on Tuesday night. Winnipeg Jets, by the way, Cole Perfetti not on the fourth line even today at practice. It's David Gustafson. And at some point, the bigger conversation with Cole Perfetti is probably going to happen. And I don't really throw this one out that seriously, considering it's an easy match for Winnipeg. But it's been an awkward ride here for Cole Perfetti lately and for a while with the Winnipeg Jets. I don't know, man. If you're a team that's out there, like you're not going to mess with their salary cap, maybe their salary structure. But at what point do we start wondering about offer sheets? Here I am in March talking about offer sheets for Cole Perfetti.
Yeah, I always like the idea of it. It's just the people that make the decisions don't like the idea of it. That's the problem. Is nobody? It's like, it's that. What is it? The gentleman's agreement.
Will you save us, Carolina? Please?
Yeah. Really, that's the only team.
It's like, yeah, whatever. About your gentleman's agreement. We're here to win a Stanley Cup.
You want some? I'm not necessarily breaking news, but an interesting tidbit because you mentioned the Flyers in there. So this was a tweet, and our pal Elliot Friedman followed up on this. So this is from Flyers Nation. In a bizarre twist of events, CSKA Moscow has terminated Ivan Fedotov's KHL contract. And so Friedge says, everyone's being careful for obvious reasons, but is believed Fedotov is en route to beginning his NHL career for the Flyers. Wasn't aware until the news broke this morning, but all sides have worked on a solution for the last few weeks. So I'll have something else to talk to Mr. Friedman about.
Well, that's interesting because Alexei Kolosov is also en route to Philly. So, like, how many Russian goaltenders are on their way to Philadelphia right now? That's two. What a week for Russian goalies to Philadelphia.
Yeah, honestly.
That's a pair of them right now. just think with the Flyers. Hey, you know what might be the game of the night tonight?
I think I know which one.
The Rangers and the Avalanche.
Yeah. Rangers 100%. That's going to be fun.
This one looks good. This one looks good. Rangers clinched against Philly. The Avalanche just had their 9-game winning streak snapped, although Nathan MacKinnon's point streak continued. This one looks juicy. Although I always do wonder about teams after they clinch how much they take their foot off the pedal. But then you figure, I don't know, isn't it like at this time of year you start playing, okay, is this a Stanley Cup final matchup? And you start to wonder, okay, what could a Stanley Cup final look like between these two teams? And legit, you could see the Rangers and the Avalanche, of course. So this one could be spicy. LA and Edmonton, we'll talk more about this with Jonathan Davis coming up at the bottom of the hour. But again, first round preview, who knows? LA's being chased hard right now for that final spot by the Vegas Golden Knights. And also LA is chasing Edmonton for second spot in the Pacific right now. Nashville faces off against the Arizona Coyotes, led by Josh Doan. After one game, 2 goals. We're saying it. This is Josh Jones' team. Preds looking for their 19th game in a row with a point.
15th team of all time if they can do it.
15th?
15th of all time if they can get a 19-game point streak.
Well done. And this one's seemingly coming out of nowhere. Good on Andrew Burnett, man. And good on those players. So Dallas and Vancouver as well.
Just on Nashville for a second. When you when you watch them, I mean, they have some star power. They have Forsberg. They have Josi. They've got some good players. Like Ryan O'Reilly's a really good player. Luke Shen's been a nice addition to that back end. And Saros has obviously been great. I mean, it was kind of an up and down year for Saros until, you know, basically 18 games ago. But do you look at them and say, that's a cup contender right there? Or do you look at them and say, just getting hot at the right time? Or both?
Not a cup contender. Not a cup contender, but a team that can upset someone, at least in the opening round.
Yeah, you don't want to play them early, basically.
Nope, that's it. But then again, like, I always have a positional bias. I always look at back ends and go like, okay, it's cup time. Let's see who has the back end.
Yeah.
And I never disqualify a team. Well, listen, Roman Josi is on
maybe two defensemen.
Some Norris Love here and Hart. But Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah.
Like, what type of defensemen are more important in the playoffs than someone like Ryan McDonagh? And Ryan McDonagh himself.
And he's done it.
So I never count out a team that has Ryan McDonagh on it, certainly in the playoffs. But they're getting some hits, and they get some great performances by, what did Ryan O'Reilly call Forsberg and Nyquist the other day? My Swedish meatballs?
Yep.
They've been fantastic. And again, every year, Philip Forsberg, you know, pencil him in, 40 goals, and there he goes. He has it again. Zucker's been a really nice acquisition for this team. Luke Evangelista is playing really well. I don't know, man. This is a good team. I don't know that they have the horses to get to the conference final, but I think it's a team that at least can do something in the first round. Can throw a good scare into someone, if not upset someone. Although considering it might be 18, 19 games in a row with a point, I don't know how much of an upset it would be, considering how hot they are.
Recency bias is always a thing, and you look at Florida, and you say, okay, we looked at Florida last year. The goalie got hot at the right time, although he wasn't even the goalie that started the playoffs for them. But it was another guy that got them in. Goalie just gets hot. I mean, that team had some star power as well. But when you looked at Montour, Ekblad, okay. Forsling. Like it's a good defense. Is it?
They were great.
Is it?
That defense was great.
But is it vastly better than what we saw, than what we see in Nashville right now? I don't know. Like, they're probably a little comparable. And the goalies, I would say, you know, if I'm talking about goalies that I have confidence in consistently, I would put Saros ahead of whatever Florida was throwing out there last year, especially the way he's playing at this point in time.
And Lankanen's been good.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Let's not forget, too. But but here's the thing. Like, whenever I see... Let me put it to you this way. Whenever I see two goaltenders with almost identical save percentages, like Kevin Woodley's going to tell me whether I'm on base or way off base on this one, if he's listening right now, or Steve Valick.
Just text me, Kevin.
When I see
just
two goaltenders... say, man, Merrick's eating space cake. What the hell? What kind of point is that? So when I see... this is for like at the end of the show where I apologize for making mistakes. I'm going to do it now. Here's how I look at goaltenders with the same save percentage. When I see goalies with the same save percentage, I think that's a reflection of the blue line in front of them and the forwards and how well they play defensively.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, like, you look at the save percentage with UC Saros, it's 909.
Yep.
And Kevin Lankanen is 904. So that's pretty much identical. To me, that's a reflection of how the team is playing in front of those two goaltenders. Again, I'm painting with a wide brush. I'm painting with a roller here, not a fine brush. I'm not drilling this right down like Valiquette and Woodley do. Like if UC Saros had like a 925 and Kevin Lankanen had like a 904, I'd say like, wow, what a season for UC Saros. But when I look at these two and their save percentages are more similar than different, I say that's a reflection more of the blue line, not just the goaltenders. And you know where we saw this? Actually, we saw this 2 years ago in Calgary with Dan Vladar and
yes.
Jacob Markstrom.
Yep.
You know, that year that Markstrom was a finalist for the Vezina. And the save percentages were pretty identical. And that was, I think, more of a reflection at that point. No offense to the goalies on this one, but that was in large part a reflection of the back end and how well the forwards are playing defensively as well.
Yeah.
Again,
fair enough.
Only my little way of looking at this thing, and I may be Kevin Woodley come to the rescue. I may be looking at this all wrong, but that's kind of how I feel about the thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
For sure, like this is a team that can knock out. Like, look what happened to Seattle last year. What did Seattle do? They knocked off the defending Cup champions.
Yeah, that's true.
Colorado Avalanche again. Playoffs, weird things happen.
So,
and Nashville's hot and playing great.
So, speaking of Nashville in that back end with Roman Josi, so I don't think we talk about this enough, but and he's not going to do it this year unless he just goes on a really torrid pace and Forsberg slows down. He led the Preds in scoring for the last four seasons. Like, I don't think we talk about that enough. With Roman Josi. It's really remarkable. And it's not as if they've had like a lack of, you know, an elite scorer or whatever. Like, there's been years. I think the year he had, I think it was 97 points. Matt Duchene, I believe, was around 80 that year. Philip Forsberg has been there. It's not like they haven't had offensive talent. It's just Roman Josi is on a different level. And I just don't think that we talk about that enough. The fact that, you know, it could have, he was going on potentially his fifth year in a row of leading this team in scoring. How many defensemen can we say that in the history of the game that led their team in scoring for four consecutive years? Probably one.
There's another thing, and there's a symmetry here between the Nashville Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. They're both teams that have done addition by subtraction. When we had Robbie Stanley on the other day talking about Nashville, what's one of the points we came around to? They needed to get Ryan Johansson out and Matt Duchene out.
Yep.
That they weren't working. That it wasn't working for them in Nashville. Much like with the Winnipeg Jets, Blake Wheeler, Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah.
Wasn't happening. Wasn't working. You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff made other moves. Barry Trotz made other moves. But one of the core moves that both those two general managers made, and these were big balls moves to do that. Right? Huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think both of them should be in consideration for the GM of the year. Like, we made our list the other day.
Yeah.
Cheveldayoff and Trotz.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Addition by what did Berkey always talk about when he was with Anaheim and why he held Getzlaff and Perry out?
Yeah, bad room.
This room isn't ready for you right now. We have to shovel out the barn before we show the horse.
Yeah.
And we're not done shoveling out the barn yet.
It is amazing.
Kind of a crude analogy, but Berkey.
Yeah, it's true. Well, unsurprising. It is amazing how that happens though. Like, a lot of people, I think the the narrative for a lot of people is, well, there's a lot of guys in the room, so how can one or two players affect a room like that? I think that's just a general wide brush view of like, well, it's not like on a basketball team where there's, you know, there's only, you know, 12 guys that get into game time, and sometimes it's only 10. But on a hockey team, it's like, well, there's so many guys. Like, how could two guys affect the room like that? I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We're seeing it here.
I don't know that it's always necessarily a room issue. It's just this isn't a fit right now, and they need another address.
Yeah.
And they need a different place. Like, you look at Matt Duchene. Like, how great of a Matt Duchene story
he's been
is it
great
right now
in, Dallas. Yeah. He's
it's
a second leading
phenomenal
scorer.
Phenomenal fit. Right? It's been great. Now, I know there have been, injuries to Blake Wheeler with the New York Rangers, and Ryan Johansson and the injury right now, and off to Colorado and then Philadelphia. But I don't think we pay enough attention to the subtraction that general managers do, because those are really tough A, conversations, and B, deals.
Well, financially, it's hard too sometimes, right? With buyouts and like that's not. Look at the decision Minnesota had to make to move out Parise and Suter. Right, that's another one. Right, that's another one that had to be done.
They're still aching.
Yeah,
I'm still stunned that they did it. Like all these years later, and here we are coming to the end of it and coming to the end of the pain for the Minnesota Wild. I'm still stunned that they did it in the first place. Holy smokes!
Yeah,
how bad.
I remember the day it happened, and I went, "Excuse me."
Yeah, I know. I think we all were. I think we all were stunned. So that's your palette for tonight. So those are the games. What's grabbing your attention before we get to Jonathan Davis here coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Well, I mean, I think that Rangers, first of all, that Rangers Colorado game is going to be a ton of fun. I think that's going to be great. But I look even at a game like, Toronto and Washington, both teams fighting for something, the Leafs less so than Washington. Washington's been very good of late.
I don't know, man. Hang on. Pause on that. Don't look now, but you know who's coming for that playoff spot? Tampa.
Yeah. Well, it's true. Like they have that's the other thing too, is like Tampa Bay has played excellent over the course of the last month. Like they've been absolutely awesome. Last night I didn't feel like they were in danger of losing that game at all. They just looked like they were in control the entire night. I didn't think Boston had a shot. I thought the scoreline was
generous.
But that's
back-to-back for Boston.
Yes, 100%.
It's back-to-back for Boston.
But as John Cooper said, like, you've got to take advantage of those games as well. Like, you've got to go out and play a certain way, and they did. By the way, Nikita Kucherov on that empty netter, that was the most relatable play I've ever had to an NHL player than Nikita Kucherov beating out an icing with nobody around him on an empty net. That was amazing. But Toronto, Austin Matthews, game time with the illness, Mitch Marner's, battling the ankle injury. Morgan Riley's out. Edmondson's out. They're dropping like flies at the wrong time here. Joseph Wall didn't have a great game the other night. Ilya Samsonov's not back. Like, people should start worrying about the Toronto Maple Leafs being not healthy heading into the playoffs here and potentially not finishing in the top three in the division and having to play either the Rangers or, I mean, it's going to be Florida or Boston anyway, but having to play even the Rangers right now or Carolina. I think the Leafs actually match up better against the Rangers and Carolina than they do against Florida and Boston. But at the end of the day, like, you do not want to be going in hobbled and you do not want to be going in playing poorly. And both of those things are happening right now.
And Sheldon Keefe is calling out his captain.
Yep.
After the last game as well. Like, it is, it's always noisy around Leafland, obviously. But this one's concerning. If you're a Maple Leafs fan, this is really concerning. And this game is concerning for you because Washington's coming in with very much something to play for and something to fight for. I mean, listen, with a win tonight, guess what? They're in third in the Metropolitan.
Yeah. The Flyers... That's the other thing with Washington too, chasing Philly. Like, if Philly doesn't make it, like, I know they've basically been in a playoff position since the beginning of the season, but if they don't make it, is anybody super
they
upset?
They should.
The Devils being on the outside, they're 6 points out. Like, they're, that's a tough sled, but Philly goes into the tank a little bit here. Maybe we're having a different conversation at the end of the year. Like, they should get
Phillies,
in.
Again, I don't like awarding wins. That's why I don't like the games in hand.
Their schedule is
still, like, you look at the schedule. Like, they got Montreal tonight. Okay. Chicago, the Islanders, the Sabres. Oh, Jesus, Sabres.
Don't hand out wins, Jeff.
Columbus, Montreal. I know. Rangers, New Jersey Devils, and finish up against the Washington Capitals. And the Capitals have one of the toughest schedules down the stretch. We've talked about countless times here on the program. So, Philly should, like, put it this way. Philly's in control.
And they could have two Russian
should be
goalies.
In control. When you and how many more Russian goalies are going to fit in Lehigh Valley? How many Russian goaltenders are going to have in the American Hockey League?
Yeah, Lance is saying, can they play right, two at once?
We keep getting questions about that for the 32 Thoughts podcast. How about, like, if you have a defenseman coming off on a line change late in the game, can you put the backup goaltender in there and have... No, you can't do that.
They've been listening to you too long to get these crazy ideas.
I know. I got to calm down the act. It's too much. Elliot Friedman coming up top of the hour from Hockey Night in Canada, 32 Thoughts. Ryan Novozinski on the New Jersey Devils. Too little, too late. But coming up next, we'll talk about the Los Angeles Kings and all things West Coast hockey with Jonathan Davis from NHL Network Radio and the Show Me the Money Hockey Betting Podcast. JD's coming up in a couple of moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So here is the question I'm about to ask Jonathan Davis of NHL Network Radio and host of the Show Me the Money Betting Podcast. Is the line of Anze Kopitar, Quentin Byfield, Adrian Kempe the best line in the NHL right now, today, in advance of the Los Angeles Kings facing off against the Edmonton Oilers this evening? So, JD, is that the top line in the NHL right now? And by the way, good afternoon, good morning. Thanks so much for dropping by.
Good morning. And I would say no. I think any line that's got Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon becomes the best line in hockey. But there is no question that, you know, okay, it's the first time in a long time, Jeff, that the LA Kings have had a trio out there that every time they step on the ice, there is a good chance that they will score. And in the past, we've always hoped that guys would score. But now the narrative has changed.
So what has changed then with this line? We've seen them play, you know, the start of the season, we thought, holy smokes, we've discovered a new, you know, with all due respect to the Dallas Stars and to your point, the Colorado Avalanche, we've discovered maybe a new top line in the NHL and then reunited again. What is different, if anything, about either of these three solo or as a combination?
Well, I think Quentin Byfield's been the biggest difference. I mean, his game has changed, gone complete 180. From last year, you know, from working out in the summer with Barb Underhill to improve his skating, to going to a longer stick about a year and a half ago, he's a much more upright player. So he, you know, in the past when he first came up, you know, he would get knocked over quite easily. He was hunched over because the stick was so small. So I think the changes that Byfield has made to his game, you know, has made him more of a guy that just hunts down pucks for Kopitar and Kempe maybe a year ago, to a guy that really drives that line. And I think in turn, I think Anze Kopitar's, it's benefited Kopitar. There, for me, Byfield's been the best player on this team from beginning of the year to where we are now, game in, game out.
Mm-hmm. One of the, and I wish they had an award for this specifically. If there was an award for most improved hockey player in the NHL, Byfield would be right up around the top for this one. Agree, disagree?
Absolutely agree. Look, you know, I'm impressed with his play on the ice. I'm impressed with his play off the ice. I go back, for me, one of the turning points for me with Quentin Byfield this year, or a standout moment, was after a loss in Calgary a couple of weeks back. And he said, you know, and this was a game that they were tied going to the third. And he said, it's unacceptable that we lost this game. We have to find a way to win this game. And that's coming from Quentin Byfield. It wasn't coming from the captain. It wasn't coming from Drew Doughty. It was coming from Quentin Byfield. And his maturity that we have seen this year, it's very impressive. This guy, Jeff, I think I may have said it to you before, he will wear a letter.
I don't think that should surprise anyone. Also, one day, his position will not start with a W. It will start with a C. And the only question is, at what point does that happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, with Deno and Kopitar signed for another 2 years after this one, you know, we're still looking at 3 years likely before he is playing center and not on the wing on a full-time basis. So, you know, the question, we'll see where how things evolve. I mean, you know, could one day Quinton Byfield be centering the top line and maybe Anze Kopitar slides down? I don't know. Is that a possibility? We'll see. But to see, to watch his evolution this year, it's been very impressive. And look, you know, there was a lot of talk, and I was definitely at the forefront, where why didn't you take Tim Stützle? Well, that conversation is gone.
It is. And I think it's a reminder, too, that we need to stop judging young hockey players right away in their first couple of seasons. Some players have a longer path. You look at what Alexis Lafreniere is doing right now with Peter Laviolette and the New York Rangers. Tonight, the Rangers face off against the Colorado Avalanche. And also, getting back to L.A., the Kings face off against the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know that in, you know, this era of these two teams, I'm ever going to get sick of watching them play against each other. Healthy bit of, you know, animosity slash hockey hatred for one another. And this is a team that, like, look, LA is chasing the Edmonton Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights are chasing the Los Angeles Kings here. Like, there's a lot at stake tonight for this game, as to say nothing of the message sending for what could be coming up here in the next 3 weeks when the playoffs start. How do you look at this one tonight, LA versus Edmonton?
Well, look, historically, this has been a house of horrors for the LA Kings. I think they've lost 8 of 10 at Edmonton. They lost earlier this year. It was 4-2 in a game that was pretty much, I think, tight till the third period. The three games this year, you know, you had the 4-2 game in Edmonton. You had the Oilers winning a 3-2 shootout. And then LA blanked Edmonton 4-0. And that was, and look, that was a game that to me had, you talked earlier about the Buffalo game and how the Sabres look like a team that just had nothing last night. That 4-0 game, yeah, you know, Edmonton, it just, they were gassed after playing at Anaheim the night before, coming back three times, I think it was. So the games have been very tight. I'm not sure, you know, look, LA's on a nice run lately. And ever since Victor Arvidsson's return, you know, it's 7-0-0 with Arvidsson in the lineup. And what he has done for this team, Jeff, is that it's not just, are, you know, he's helped Pierre-Luc Dubois statistically. The top line, Jeff, has averaged a point a game with Arvidsson in the lineup. So it's trickled down throughout. They've become a much better team. To think that, you know, that how much he has meant, I don't want to say it's surprising, because I don't want to take anything away from Arvidsson, but, you know, 7-0-0 with Arvidsson is somewhat surprising. I think it's a bigger game. I don't really know, Jeff. I don't think it's a bigger game for either team, to be honest with you, because if they, you know, it's just going to come down to what happens if they face each other in round one again. So I'm not putting too much stock into what happens tonight.
So, well, first of all, way to sell the game. Second of all, you know what the Arvidsson thing reminds me of, JD? That is, I mean, a million years ago with the New York Rangers, when, you know, when Sean Avery was in the lineup, they did not lose. And the only time they did lose is when Avery wasn't in the lineup. Like, I know seven games is not a whole lot of, you know, runway here for us to sort of measure how LA is going to land the plane. But still, you're right. Like, they do play like a different team, and they're a much better team when Victor Arvidsson is in the lineup. Put it this way, it looks to me like the whole team is more settled. Like, everything is in its right place. Nobody has to play a line higher than they have to, or a position higher than they have to. But let me ask you about this. One more thought on the Kings, then I want to move on. Mikey Anderson and Drew Doughty. I don't want to say they're the best combination in the NHL, because you already spanked me for suggesting that with the Kopitar line, so I won't do it again. But they are very much, how about an underrated or an under-discussed pair in the NHL? How about that?
I think that that's fair. Yeah, there's no question. And I think, you know, look, it's funny. I think that, you know, Drew's statistical offensive numbers are really good this year. I mean, he is putting up some good numbers. I don't look at him as the same guy that's dominating the game. They really miss Mikey Anderson, and so did Drew when they're out of the lineup. And look, I'm not trying not to sell. Like, I think tonight's going to be a great game. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, the result to me doesn't matter.
Because
I don't think it does. But it's going to be highly entertaining, to say the least. Now, the other thing, you mentioned about everybody being slotted with Arvidsson in the lineup. The only pushback I'll have with that, Jeff, is that they're still playing 11-7. Like, Arthur Kaliev is on LA's version of Robidoux Island right now. And so until Carl Grundstrom gets back into the lineup, go ahead.
No, if you could just pause on that I'm surprised you didn't get moved at deadline. Like, I thought of all the things that was going to happen here, I thought Kaliev was gonzo.
I think they did a disservice to him by not moving him at the deadline. I don't think that's fair to him. You're not playing him. You're embarrassing him. Give him an opportunity to play somewhere else. It's not right what they're doing to Arthur Kaliev. But okay. Let's move on. We'll move on from that. So when Carl Grundstrom gets back and he just started skating, he did travel with the team out west. That's a good sign that he, instead of skating in LA where he would get more ice time, that he is on the road with them. So when he comes back, it'll be 12-6. They'll have a move that they're going to have to make. Likely, Turcotte gets sent down. We'll see what happens. But that's the Kaliev thing for me is just, it's baffling.
Do you, just sort of off the map a little bit here, Seattle's facing off tonight against the Anaheim Ducks. Now, I get, like, there's nothing up for grabs here. Like, technically, Seattle is not eliminated yet. Anaheim has already been eliminated. And so we turn our attention to, who's Rick Nash going to take from Anaheim for the World Championships? but tonight, it's Anaheim facing off against Seattle. Seattle's still not technically eliminated. They had a couple of call-ups recently from Coachella Valley. Logan Morrison and Ryan Winterton come up, and I think a lot of us are wondering, okay, what does that mean then for Shane Wright, fourth overall draft pick, Montreal, etc.? And I look at this because I don't think that Ron Francis is the kind of person that doesn't have a plan, especially a plan for someone like Shane Wright. And I look at the schedule and I say to myself, okay, well, they weren't going to play him in that game against, they weren't going to call him up and play him in that game against Montreal for the circus sideshow that would have been. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I try to find, like, okay, so where's the sweet spot of the bat here for Shane Wright to join the team? Because I do think at some point they're going to call him up. Like, he's playing too well at the American Hockey League level, not for them to call him up and give him a taste. So obviously not tonight against Anaheim, probably not against Dallas 2 days from now. But I wonder about the road trip. They go out to San Jose, then they face off against Los Angeles, and then Anaheim again. So I wonder if that's the road trip where we see the Shane Wright call up. You know, call him up, play him the games, and then send him back down to Coachella Valley. A, do you have a thought on maybe my throwing darts here at the Shane Wright schedule? And two, just a thought on how things have gone with Seattle this year. I mean, the highlight was obviously the Winter Classic and the win against the Vegas Golden Knights. But do you have a thought on Shane Wright and Seattle? Boy, that's a long-winded question.
Yes. Okay, so I'll go back to a point that you were also making earlier in the show about locker room and when you want to bring a guy up. Jeff, I'm sure you heard Dave Haxtell's comments after that loss to Montreal on Sunday night. And, to hear a coach question his player's heart and desire, I don't think you want to bring Shane Wright into a room with it being as toxic as he felt it was, or just a lack of caring. Mm-hmm. So I think, you want to be careful. I think the road trip does make sense. I think for the organization, the win against Anaheim, that was a rocking chair game. Jeff, you and I could have played goal that night against Anaheim. I think Joey DeCord had 12 saves that night. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. But I think that was an important win for Seattle after the way Haxtell called out his team. So, yeah, I think this road trip, don't bring him up against a game against Dallas. I mean, that makes no sense to me. I think the road trip is a good time.
Okay, let me ask you about Vegas here. Got a couple of minutes left with you. Vegas, a fascinating team, always an interesting team around trade deadline, whether it's the moves, whether it's the play recently, despite the complete, I don't know how to look at it. Is it a Vegas collapse or is it, you know, Nashville just putting their foot on the gas? The game the other night on Tuesday was a bizarre and B, fantastic one, depending on which side of the rink you're on or which bench you're on. But do you have a thought on Vegas right now, you know, starting to really hit a stride again, despite the game against Nashville, really starting to hit a stride at the right time before they start to get players back too?
Well, it is also a bit of nervous time, Jeff. I mean, with Aiden Hill out, you know, that means it's, you know, it's Logan Thompson who's played really well of late. But, you know, Jiří Patera did his best for 40 minutes to keep his team in the game, and then it fell through. You know, look, yeah, they're still missing Alec Martinez. They're still missing Pietrangelo on the blue line. That's, you know, and Petro's, he did make the trip. But the goaltending situation is a concern. The St. Louis victory was huge for them because it pretty much eliminates the Blues, who still have some soft games out there.
Yes.
But look, we're still waiting for Vegas to get healthy. I mean, they haven't, and you know, they should get. Thomas Hertl's been skating on his own. He will mm-hmm. play, my understanding, before the regular season comes to an end. But Mark Stone, although he's been at the rink, he ain't skating, Jeff. Like, this is, you know, to your point about this whole LTIR fiasco, this is not a guy that they're stashing away, and they're hoping and praying he can play game 83. But, Jeff, there's no signs that he will. So that is a concern. Jonathan Marchessault has been huge for this team, one goal away from his first 40-goal season. You know, and Jack Eichel's done his best to try to carry the team on the back. But, you know, they're still missing two of their best defensemen.
They are very much. I do wonder about as well with Mark Stone. Like, I know all the cynics are saying, oh yeah, he's going to be there for game 83. Like, here we go again. But I'm with you. Like, this is, and we've seen Vegas fall out of it before because of injuries. Now, I don't think it's going to happen this time around. But it's not as if, you know, all of this isn't a gamble by Vegas. But they're quite comfortable making those decisions. I am fascinated to see how Tomáš Hertl fits into this mix. Like, I thought Tomáš Hertl was going to be traded. You know, after reading, you know, Pešalka's interview with him at the beginning of the season, I thought that was an off-season move. Like, again, there's always one stunner at trade deadline. Once upon a time, it was Varana for Mantha. That's Detroit Washington trade. But I did not see Hertl coming at all. Like, nothing, no smoke signals, no whispers, no anything about Tomáš Hertl. So that is the one. And I think he's just like, honestly, he's been like a real bright spot in a dark time for San Jose. Normally I'm worried about players that spend, you know, the year they get traded, a lot of time out of the playoffs and playing empty calorie games and meaningless games, because it's really tough just to flip that switch. But Tomáš Hertl is different. I mean, the injury is certainly the mitigating factor here. Again, I thought he was getting moved. It was going to be off season. Kelly McCrimmon jumps up and makes a deal for him, and a really nice bit of business as well. I think the 2/3 that they got in the deal was a stroke of brilliance by the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, it's a sort of a Picasso of a deal here if Hertl can get healthy enough to play. Because if this guy's healthy, like, he was like the only positivity on that team on a lot of really challenging nights, and you saw many of them.
Yeah. Well, look, they're very excited at Vegas. You know, although he hasn't, you know, he's practiced on his own for the most part. You know, guys are telling me that he is integrated really well into the team. And the one thing that Hertl remarked was when he got there is he couldn't believe how big this team was. I mean, he's a big boy, and he's looking around the room, and the size of this team was very impressive. He felt like one of the smaller guys. Yeah, look, I think this is going to be a great fit for Vegas once he gets out there. But look, Jeff, ultimately, you know, it's their goaltending. You know, I'm interested to see, you know, when and if does Aiden Hill get back? Because if it's a groin injury, you know, you'd rather it be almost a broken bone where you can time it out.
Yeah.
Groin injuries, you know, and it's going to put a lot of strain on Logan Thompson, who I know is relishing the opportunity to run with being the number one goalie. But, you know,
for sure,
we'll see. And we'll see.
All right. JD, on that, we got to wrap. Heavy up against the clock. Always appreciate it. Full value. Thank you, my friend. We'll check back soon.
All right. Take care. Enjoy the 14-game night. My TVs are going to be busy and working overtime.
Now, are you doing the overnight for NHL Network Radio too? Can I listen to your dulcet tones as I wake up tomorrow morning?
You can listen to me tomorrow morning as I try to dissect all 14 games tonight.
Beautiful. We got to hustle. Time now quickly for Line Change. Presented Action, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local, Matt Marchese. What you got?
Capitals at the Maple Leafs. Puck line is Maple Leafs -1.5. Toronto 7-1 straight up in their last 8 against Washington. The over has hit in 10 of the last 15 between these two teams.
Tampa is chasing Toronto for third in the Atlantic. The Capitals, second wild card right now. They have eyes on third in the Metropolitan Division. Morgan Riley, day-to-day. Austin Matthews, game-time decision with an illness. That was Line Change presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
You know, it's right around this time of year where you look at some performances, either individual or team, and you say to yourself, so what does it all mean? And do they really have a shot? Is this legit? Is this fool's gold? Do we read this for right now, or do we read this for next season? And a lot of those questions I think we ask about this year's edition and the performance right now of the New Jersey Devils. Hoping to sharpen the pencil a little bit finer on this one, we bring aboard Ryan Novosinski from NJ.com and Star Ledger to hopefully clear things up and sort of lift the fog, Ryan, not to put too much of an accent on this, but what does all of this mean? Like, we're seeing wins, we're seeing big performances from Timo Meier, we're seeing some great performances from Jake Allen, specifically the game earlier this week against the Toronto Maple Leafs. What does it all mean right now, Ryan? And good afternoon. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Well, good afternoon, Jeff. It means that this is the most, I mean, I don't even know if I'd call it like a new coach bump for this team. I mean, they're an even 6-6 since Travis took over. It just means that Ryan's life is going to be very confusing for the next couple of weeks is what it means. I'm just as stunned as you are and as I'm sure many outside viewers of the Devils are. I mean, you know, one game, it's like, okay, they're surefire going to lose the game. Then they pick up, you know, a win against the Jets, commanding win against the Penguins and the Jets. Then they drop a game to Ottawa, and it's like, okay, that, you know, dips their playoff percentage however many points. And then they go out and they, you know, have commanding wins over the Islanders and the, like you said, the Leafs there.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of it. All I know is, like you said, Timo Meier is finally playing like the Timo Meier that this team, you know, wanted him to play like. A lot of that's health. A lot of that, you know, could be an improved role, too, under Coach Travis Green. And, you know, the goaltending, you look at it, I mean, this team, I think they're 8th or 9th in goaltending since, you know, they made some of the trades for Kakanen and Allen. Kakanen's been great as well. It's a new kind of wave of freshness in New Jersey.
So I would imagine that, again, like, you hate to live your life, you know, hindsight 2020 and all that. We're all, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks. But I'm guessing if you're Tom Fitzgerald, you're probably saying to yourself, you know what? We probably should have made the goalie move earlier this season. Like, I know it's not the only issue with New Jersey. You know, you and I, whenever we get together, we tend to talk a lot about Dougie Hamilton and that injury. But he wasn't the only one that got dinged. Jack Hughes certainly is another factor as well. But if you're Fitzgerald, is the one outstanding thing from this season that, if I had a do-over, I would do this one over a different way, is that make the move for the goaltender sooner?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at that. Listen, the Jake Allen thing with the no trade clause, that's one thing. That's, you know, I guess kind of outside circumstances. But, you know, you could have gotten the Kakanen, you know, who has played very well. And when you look at even some of the advanced metrics, I mean, even with probably like a 0.1 goal save above expected or whatever it is right now, he still, you know, leads the team in goalie metrics there. You could have done that. You think if you got him for Vanacek and a 7th rounder, you probably could have done that. I don't know, January, December, something like that. You're going to be kicking yourself for that. I guess the one silver lining here is that, you know, or the one thing that I guess he shouldn't be too much kicking himself about is, hey, you got a goalie, you got a 1B goalie for next year to pair, you know, behind that big game hunting that he's going to be, that he says he's going to be doing this offseason.
Elephant in the room, Jacob Markstrom.
That's the one. It seems like it, right? That's, you know.
Worst kept secret in the NHL.
Exactly. And it's either going to be him. It's either, you know, I think there's going to be a couple names that kind of emerge on this trade market this offseason. And, you know, maybe that's for the best. Maybe, you know, Fitzgerald not making the move now where he would have to give up, you know, what seemed like a ridiculous package to get one of these premier goalies in the NHL. Maybe it's better. You're better suited to wait till the offseason when, you know, you get a one less year off of the Markstrom deal and you get, or, you know, the Soros deal or the Ullmark deal. If he's going big game hunting, these are the names he's going to look at. And I mean, I think Devils fans would be satisfied with really any of them.
What is, because listen, anytime, you know, the New Jersey Devils, you know, come knocking on the door of another team, I'm sure, oh, you would like this netminder? Sure, we would like, I don't know, Nemec or Hughes or Dawson Mercer. Like, we're happy to relieve you of the burden of having all of these young, wonderful prospects. I'm curious, what's off the table?
What's off the table, I think you already mentioned it. I think it's Nemec. You know, I think it's Nemec. I think it's Hughes, obviously. You know, I think both of those. Nemec has played so well this season. He looks like a veteran already. I mean, I'm just going to say it like that. There are times where there are mistakes and really bad ones at that. But he has grown into a player that's, I mean, I didn't really think that it would translate right away. I think there would be, you know, some growing pains there, but this is a guy that, you know, not only is he an offensively very talented defenseman, but he can kill penalties. You can put him on that unit. You can, you know, he's reliable at times in the back end. I really like Nemec. I don't think that that's someone that you can give up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not advocating for trading Mercer by any means, but I think that's a player with a contract situation coming up. You don't know exactly what the value there is going to be, and there's a lot of players coming off the book here that you're going to have to figure out contract-wise. That might be one that you look at, you know, and create a package around that.
You know, let me circle back to Nemec here for a quick second. And this is, like, I'm not there every day. You are. You go to the practices. You're there at all the games. So you know this a lot better than I do. I'm just sort of speculating based on what I see when I watch the games from my office. But it seems as if Nemec, I don't know if he's breathed new life into someone like Alexander Holtst, but it seems as if when those two are on the ice together, Nemec is just trying to find him, try to find him. Real good player there in Holtst. We haven't been able to see the full complement of what he's able to do until really this season. Essentially, I'm just asking, did Nemec breathe new life into Alexander Holtst, or am I just seeing things and maybe projecting something that I noticed once and now I want it to be a thing?
Well, I look at it, Jeff, and I see three goals this year. There was one against Washington. There was one against, I can't remember the other one right now. And then there was the one in the Islanders game that I would say some of the better goals of the Devils season have come from, you know, a Nemec to Holtst kind of connection there. They do. They have a good chemistry there. I asked Nemec about it after the game on the island, and, you know, he kind of just smiles and he says, yeah, you know, I just feed him the puck, and sometimes he scores, sometimes he doesn't, but I'll always try to feed it to him, and it's great. It's an awesome quote, you know, but that's a guy that, you know, if you get Alexander Holtst in the right places, and I think he's getting, you know, more mature at that. He's having a better opportunity here where he's not having to worry about getting benched, you know, for making, you know, a mistake. And you kind of improve his ice time, but you pair him with the Jack Hughes, which he has right now. And you're seeing he's creating some of these scoring chances. Now, you would like to see, you know, some of these goals go in at a better rate. But, I mean, 5-on-5 scoring, he's up there, and, you know, above some of the better players in the league in that regard. Yes, I agree with you. And that's why I asked much about it the other day. I think there's a chemistry there. There's a chemistry there from you know, Nemec, too. He says, yeah, Alex is a good guy.
Well, like, look, I'm not going to get, like, the, to me, like, one of the best batteries I've ever seen between defenseman and forward is, you know, Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron circa 2011 to about 2013 or 14, where when they were on the ice, nobody else touched the puck. Like, to me, that's always been the gold standard of that combination, 1D and one forward. But like, every time I watch, like, to your point, I'm watching Nemich and Holtz. Now, the one thing that that sort of does lead into is, you know, change of coaches always, generally means a longer leash for a lot of players. And you already mentioned Alexander Holtz and what he's been able to do now that, you know, it's been Travis Green behind the bench. Anyone else come to mind for you right away? Like, who all of a sudden is a different player with the new head coach behind the bench?
Well, you know, I know we mentioned him at the beginning, and this kind of seems like, you know, like a retread of what we already said. But, I mean, it's Timo Meier. I mean, you put him exactly where, you know, he needs to be kind of positioned in that top six. I think the left wing versus right wing, you know, where you place him in the lineup is a little bit overrated because he's, you know, played both in San Jose. But the fact that, that he's moved up to his correct spot on the power play, the fact that he's getting this to these top 6 minutes. I mean, he's the leading goal scorer in March. I mean, he's gotta be a third star or one of the three stars of the month of March. He's been on a tear. He's gotten healthier. That's obviously the biggest takeaway here. But I do think that, you know, there were times, Jeff, where you know, he was stamped in the third line or, you know, way down there, you know, his ice time was being limited. Of course, you can correlate that to injury at times, but at some point, you just got to, you know, let Timo kind of cook there, right? And cook he has. I mean, yeah. You know, you look at some of the, you know, dangerous area goals that he's been able to get. And, I mean, you just look at there's so many goals. I think there was one in Pittsburgh where he just drives in and you just get like a Timo Meier goal. I mean, the bull, like, kind of power forward that drives inside, gets one right in front of the crease. I mean, it's so him, and it's excellent. I mean, you this is the player that they paid for, they traded for, and now it's paying off. Now he kind of, you know, I guess sheds that shred of doubt that there was at the beginning of the season, which, you know, it was definitely prevalent there.
Let me take you back to that Islanders game that you referenced. I would imagine the entire organization held its breath at one very specific moment, and you know where I'm going. Anders Lee catches Nico Hischier. Like, whenever someone comes in with a wide base to try to hit someone along the boards, I always get worried. I'm like, someone's on the boards here, back us up against the wall. They're going to squirm. They're going to try to get out whichever way they can. And when someone's coming in with a wide base, sometimes that means we're going knee on knee. And sure enough, that's what happened. I don't think it was malicious or deliberate by Anders Lee. I understand I might be in the minority on that one amongst Devils fans, but thankfully Nico Hischier is okay. But how much did everybody sort of collectively gasp when they saw that play?
Oh, I looked over to my buddy James Nichols in the press box, and I said, this is with how this team has fared injury-wise this year. This looks like one of those things where he's going to be, you know, there's however many games left, he's done. That's how much of the collective gasp there was. Now he comes back out in third, and then you see Timo drop the gloves with Anders, and that was, you know, kind of the classic, like, okay, team come together kind of moment there. And then you get, you know, the saves from Kakinen there, and it all ended up being an excellent win for them. Definitely, given this team's injury woes this year, that's how we thought it was going to go. I mean, there's still players. We talked about Dougie, Nathan Bastian's still out, Jonas Siegenthaler's still out because of the Rempe hit. It has not gone well for them in that department this year, and that's a big part. I still think there's talent on this team, and I think, you know, they could have fared better, and you know, even with some of the injuries this year, but injuries have played a huge factor in the season. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, so let's play a game of what if here. Now, the New Jersey Devils are 6 points out of a playoff spot right now. Let's say they win their next game against the Buffalo Sabres and beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that takes us to April 3rd and a game against the New York Rangers. If the New Jersey Devils are only a couple of points out of a playoff spot at that point, like, let's just say things break their way, does the Matt Rempe issue matter at that point in that game against the Rangers? Does it matter at all?
You know what? Yeah, I think regardless of what happens, Jeff, I think it's going to matter. You know, this is a guy. I mean, McDermott has been hurt. You know,
yep.
I really think that this is something that's been hanging over his head and you know, obviously Rempe's head for the past couple of weeks. Of course, you don't want to give up, you know, or have to be down a man because of, as a result of, you know, a fight or whatever, a dirty hit or anything like that. But I do think that's going to be one of those more physical games that you see. I mean, we already saw that last game, and I think this time, with the way that Rempe kind of, you know, waved his way off the ice there, and then, you know, all the candor from McDermott after the game, you look at McDermott. Yeah. I'm probably 5'9", 5'10", you know, the 180 or whatever, and I look at McDermott in the locker room, I'm like, oh my gosh, and then you see him, and he's on the ice against a guy like Rempe. It's going to be two, you know, powerhouses maybe going against each other.
All right, we'll see what happens when we get there. Okay, last question for you, and thank you. Listen, you're always really generous with your time. Shopping list. You're Tom Fitzgerald in the off season. Certainly, the goalie issue is out there. What other issues are out there for Tom Fitzgerald?
Yeah, listen. You need some more depth forward wise. You might need a second center if Jack's going to continue to play the wing. I don't know if that's the long term goal there, but Jack does like playing the wing. I'll give you a name. I'll tell you who I really want. I've been kind of banging this drum behind the scenes a little bit for the past couple of weeks now. I think Chandler Stephenson would be a good fit for this Devils team. You know, and then I think you really got to pivot to, you got to get a defensive-minded defenseman too. You know, really kind of bolster who that name is on the market this offseason. It might be a trade, might be, you know, via free agency. I don't know, but I think, you know, some depth of the forwards, you know, in the forward group, kind of retweaking around that bottom six there. And then you really figure out depth at defenseman too, and really get a defensive minded guy back there. Cause a lot of offensive guys here in New Jersey, but not many guys that, you know, got to get someone that's great in the back end too.
Excellent points. As always, thanks so much for your time. Really generous, as I mentioned before. Thanks so much for sharing the expertise on the Devils. 6 points out of a playoff spot right now. One of the more intriguing teams with some dynamic personalities. Things haven't gone swimmingly for New Jersey. Lots of reasons for it, but never a dull moment nonetheless. Ryan, thanks as always for stopping by. Thanks, pal.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Ryan Novosinski covers the New Jersey Devils for NJ.com and Star Ledger. They face off against the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow. And then it is the Pittsburgh Penguins on the 2nd of April, and then the big game against the New York Rangers. I do wonder, like, I know that issue does hang out. Let's bring Matt Marchese into this conversation. Matty, so let's say you're the New Jersey Devils, mm-hmm. and let's say, you know, you win your game against Buffalo.
Yes.
Say you win your game against Pittsburgh and things start to break your way. And you still have games against, you know, Ottawa, Nashville, a pair against Toronto, the Flyers, and the New York Islanders still to go. Mm-hmm. But if you get on kind of a roll, I know that the New Jersey Devils, whether it's the Bastion injury, whether it's the Siegenthaler injury, and what happened in the last game with the New York Rangers, as Ryan just mentioned, you know, with the little wave and the under orders not to fight from Peter Laviolette's. If the Devils are inching closer to getting a playoff spot, do they even try to engage? Like, does the Matt Rempe issue at that point matter at all? Or is that something that gets, in your mind, punted into next season? I think it's a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, I struggle with this because I do think that something does need to be done. In the context of one singular game, unless you're taking an instigator penalty and putting yourself, you know, behind the eight ball with a penalty kill, I mean, if it's two willing combatants, if Matt Rempe says, okay, I got to answer the bell here, then I'm okay with it. But you can't, if you're McDermott going out there, you cannot be taking an instigator in that moment if you are still in it. Because that could end up being...
That's it.
You know, that. So that's where it comes... I think you go about it as if you are going to take action, but you got to be really careful in how you go about doing it while you're in the moment. And I know that is very difficult to do.
It's hard. It's hard. We all know that's why Curtis McDermott was brought in the first place.
Yep.
To deal with the Rempe issue. I just don't know if you knew. There's just too much at stake. There's just too much. And again, you know who controls all of it?
Matt Rempe.
Matt Rempe.
Sure he does.
Doesn't have to do anything.
No.
Does not have to do anything. We're getting ahead of ourselves. This is something we'll talk about on the April 3rd edition of the program. But nonetheless, 14 games tonight. You know, we didn't, during our sports interaction feature, talk much about Washington and the Maple Leafs. Kind of covered that off a little bit more with Elliot Friedman. But just to recap for everybody, Austin Matthews, game time decision with the illness. Still no Morgan Rielly for the Maple Leafs. Still no Mitch Marner for the Maple Leafs. We've seen Sheldon Keefe call out his captain after the New Jersey Devils team specifically, and it's rare to see Sheldon Keefe go after John Tavares like that, but and nonetheless. Elliot's point was it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of panic or like rush to rush players back here, despite the fact that you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and outside of the Nashville Predators, they've been the best team in March. Like it's a remarkable record here. Hang on, what's the record for the Tampa Bay Lightning? 6-0-1 in their last seven.
Mm-hmm.
Scratch that. Preds are 9-0-2 in March. Tampa is 8-1-1.
Yeah.
So Nashville, the only team that has a better record in March than Tampa Bay Lightning, but doesn't seem as if there's much pressure around the Maple Leafs organization, even though Tampa's coming.
Okay, hot take here. And I don't even know how it would play out in terms... I don't even know if it's a hot take, but I kind of mentioned it earlier. I think they match up better with teams in the Metro than they do with teams in their own division. Like, if you're Toronto, you're probably not worried because, A, you're getting in, and B, you're going to get whatever the lesser of the number one seeds are in the wild card. You still may end up playing Boston mm-hmm. or Florida, but you also have a chance to play Carolina or New York, which I think are the more favorable matchups if you're the Maple Leafs. I think that is part of the conversation. The other thing is we're kind of home and cooled here. I know they haven't clinched officially, but they're pretty much it. Like they'd have to absolutely, it would be great for radio and TV in terms of talking points if they went into the tank and didn't make the playoffs, but and not good for the bottom line, but at the end of the day, they're in. I think it's just about getting healthy and being as healthy as you possibly can be at this point in the season, because they didn't make a lot of changes at the trade deadline. This roster has been together largely for the entire season, basically the entire season. So it's not as if you're working guys into the lineup. You're working one forward and, you know, two defensemen into the lineup. It's not as significant as it was last season. So I think that's part of the conversation as well, is let's just get healthy, because it's not like we have to work on chemistry. I do think they have to figure out what the heck their lines look like by the time the playoffs come around. Like, Where do Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi fit in when Mitch Marner comes back? Like, which one of those guys comes off the top line? That's a conversation. But outside of that, I mean, their other biggest conversation point is who's going to play on the fourth line. And to me, I don't think that that's a big issue. I think they know who their six best defensemen are. Personally, I do not think that includes TJ Brody when you're starting the playoffs. But, like, in terms of questions, they don't have a ton of glaring ones. It's like, okay, and then we're going to figure out who's going to start game one in net, but that leash is probably going to be short too. I think they have all their questions answered. It's just, let's get healthy.
Yeah. And that's a tall order. And I think too, what you're really seeing here, and this is going to sort of, you know, start to play itself more in the off season as well, but I think you really see just how much this team is different when Mitch Marner's out of the lineup. I mean, obvious statement, you know, number 2,000 of the day for me, but it is a completely different squad without Mitch Marner.
Sure.
And make no mistake about it, like Max Domi and Austin Matthews have looked really good together. Both Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi have had really good second halves of their season. Like, this is the Tyler Bertuzzi we're used to seeing down the stretch with Detroit, certainly, and in the playoffs with the Boston Bruins last year. But historically, this has been Tyler Bertuzzi's reputation down the stretch, and you're starting to see it now. But man, this is a very different squad without Marner. And that's great for his camp come July 1st when he can do a contract extension with the Maple Leafs. Thanks to everyone who took part in the show today. Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and also from the Show Me the Money Hockey Betting Podcast. Thanks to Elliot Friedman, as always, from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Ryan Novosinski, you just heard from NJ.com and the Star Ledger. Thanks to Matt Marchese, producer slash co-host, technical operator Lance Kennedy, and the great Jen Rolnick handled the difficult job of making this look good. We got a ball game this afternoon, and then we got a lot of hockey tonight. It's a great one. Sit down and enjoy as much of it as you can. Merrick Show returns Friday, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Back tomorrow.